Welcome to the Holistic Endo Expert Podcast. This is your girl, your host, Dr. Johnson, and I want to personally welcome you to season two of this amazing podcast. This podcast is going to put you in the driver's seat of your health by giving you the tools, tips, and tricks that you need to not only manage endometriosis, but take you from endo warrior to endo conqueror. All right. Welcome. We are back for another episode of the Holistic Endo Expert. I am your girl, your host, Dr. LJ, and we have got Dr. Kerbal in the house. Today, we are talking about everything under the endometriosis rug. You guys know that I talk about it all the time. We like to sweep everything under the rug. Today, honey, you already know, grab your Kleenexes. We're coming for you with all the details on what you can do to not only manage endometriosis, but level up your health. We're going to talk about personal health journeys, and we're honestly going to drop more tools in the toolbox per usual. Dr. Kerbal, welcome.
Great to be here. Thanks so much for having me on. I love your community. Love what you're doing.
Thank you. So let's just start with your journey. I know we talked a little beforehand. Tell us a little bit about why you do what you do, because I think that always speaks so powerfully to the audience.
Yeah. So for me, you know, I wasn't one suffering from endometriosis, but I know what my patients, my wellness clients go through, because for me, it was 10 years of no diagnosis, no ability to heal. And then finally, one day I meet someone that's able to shine a light on that. So obviously, you know, today, many years later, I am healed. I have no disease, no diagnosis, no ill health issues whatsoever, and feel better than ever. But it wasn't the case from 17 years old to 27 years old. So at 17 years old, I wake up one day, I have swollen glands throughout my entire body. My lymph nodes are just massively the size of golf balls over my neck, my armpits, my groin, and my tongue is swollen, my face is swollen. And obviously I walk downstairs and my mother looks at me, she's horrified. I'm horrified. I don't know what's going on. We go to the doctors and I didn't know it, but that was 2 years then of going to over two dozen different medical doctors and specialists, only to be told that it's either all in my head or that maybe I have cancer. They have no idea what's going wrong, what's wrong with me. And this is in the mid 90s. And unfortunately, there was no diagnosis or hope of getting well with conventional medicine, simply because on standard blood work, I looked okay. My white blood cells were off, but if I didn't have cancer and I didn't have HIV, they didn't know what was wrong with me. So I would then start to move into a field I knew nothing about, which was natural medicine or alternative health. And I would meet practitioners and they started to really share with me, oh, it could be adrenal based, it could be food sensitivities. And I started to find out more and more about my body and things I was never taught as a child. And then one day, it wasn't out of the blue, I was reading hundreds and then thousands of books on natural health, trying to find out how to heal. I'd become a certified personal trainer, a nutritionist, a strength and conditioning specialist, like all these things, trying to move my own healing journey and teach to others as well what I knew. And then I met Dr. Pete, and Dr. Pete, she was a very unassuming 65, 70 year old doctor, naturopathic doctor that I went to. And from the very first meeting, I knew that it was different. She helped combine traditional naturopathy, Ayurvedic medicine, some traditional Chinese medicine, at-home functional medicine lab testing to look at my gut health issues, to look at my cortisol and genetics. And within 6 months of meeting her, you know, it wasn't all attributed to her, but within 6 months, I overcame diagnosis of Addison's disease, which is no cortisol production. I overcame POTS, which is postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. So you basically, you're lightheaded when you stand all the time. Your heart rate races under even minimal exertion. You can't exercise. I had type 2 diabetes, couldn't regulate my blood sugar. I had rheumatoid arthritis, an autoimmune issue. I had awful allergies, insomnia, and so much more. And like I said, I was literally cured within 6 months. Now, little did I know what is cured actually means. Well, I got rid of all of those disease diagnoses, but over the next few years, I would get better and better and better as I continued on this health-based journey. So that's where I came from. That's the shortened version. And I've spent literally my entire life trying to simply pay it forward and teach others what Dr. Pete was able to share with me.
I love it. Essentially, what I'm hearing is you've turned your pain into your passion.
I love that. So, without a doubt. That's that. And I love my mess into my message, but I haven't heard pain into passion, but that's 100% the truth. Yeah, without a doubt.
So tell us a little bit about, you got the diagnosis and then you got cured. And I love that you use the word healed. When you say the word healed, because I know for me,
and the functional medicine community and the health community, people sometimes get a little, their feathers get a little ruffled. They don't really want to use the word healed, but it's like, okay, is it healed? I use the word remission. Sometimes it's a little more acceptable, I guess, or PC in the endo community because there's technically no cure, but I love that you said healed. What did healing look like for you? Because I know it's different for everyone.
Yeah. So I had to heal both mind and body. This is really important because what I realized was that I had done a lot of the right things, but I still wasn't getting better. I've seen this in my practice. The only people who can't heal, I think we just have different ways of looking at it. We all have the same, we all have our genetics. That's our genotype, but our phenotype is who we become. In Ayurvedic medicine, they say the same thing 6,000 years ago. You have your Prakriti, that's your genos, that's your genetic type. And then you have your Vikriti, which is your phenotype. It's what you become. So I always had rheumatoid arthritis, autoimmune issues in my genetics. I always had type 2 diabetes. All four of my grandparents had rheumatoid arthritis. Both my parents had rheumatoid arthritis. Now, they didn't get it until their early 50s. I got mine at 17. My rain barrel overflowed at an earlier age. That means I had more toxicity, more deficiencies at that time. Now I don't have rheumatoid arthritis and haven't had it for at least 15 plus years. So I don't look at it as in remission because that means that, at any moment it could pop back almost, but it's not the case for me. Is as long as I don't overflow that rain barrel again, then I'm always going to be in remission. So I'm healed, but at the same time, it's always been in my genetics. So that's how I look at it. We're all susceptible to something. You may be susceptible to endometriosis. Understood. I'm not going to be. I'm also not really susceptible to like Hashimoto's thyroiditis. Nobody really has it in my family, but we all have rheumatoid arthritis. We all have blood sugar issues. We all have high cholesterol. So that is what my genes will allow for if I allow them in the right environment from toxicities and deficiencies in order to go in that space. I also don't believe in disease, meaning like I believe that disease names are a collection of symptoms so that we can simply add a medication or put in a specific ICD-9 code in conventional medicine. For me, it's a set of symptoms. When I had rheumatoid arthritis, I had pain in my thumb joints. I had pain in my elbows. And so should I give it a name, rheumatoid arthritis? Sure. Or should I just say that I had candida overgrowth, SIBO, I had H. pylori, intestinal permeability, massive food sensitivities and allergies. It led to an increase in inflammation, which then set off my genetics. We can talk however deep you want. And I had rheumatoid arthritis. And so I don't believe in these names because what happened was then I became a victim of Addison's disease. I became a victim of rheumatoid arthritis or autoimmune disease. And in order to overcome something, you can't be a victim from it. And I know we're getting kind of deep here and I want to be sensitive because I understand when you're in it, it's debilitating. And I looked for that disease diagnosis as well. It took me to 20 years old to get diagnosed with Addison's and all these different things because who would ever think to test a 19-year-old or 17-year-old for Addison's? Nobody. So yeah, I mean, we're saying the same thing, but I always like to empower people first because you have to believe you can overcome it in order to overcome it in the first place.
I feel you. I'm taking it. I'm taking it all in. I'm feeling the energy. It's very interesting too, because when I talk to my community, I always make it very clear that I was diagnosed with asthma. I was diagnosed with endometriosis. And if I ever say like my this, my that, you'll hear me catch myself and I come back and I'm like, number one, I'm not naming it and claiming it, right? It is a diagnosis, right? That is what helped my insurance get me some of the treatments that I needed. You know, the bill wasn't going to be paid unless a code was put there. But at the end of the day, I'm not endometriosis. And a lot of you wake up in the morning, you do the body scan. And this is why I always talk about an endo warrior versus an endo conqueror. An endo warrior, you wake up, you're at war with your body. It's like, okay, I'm in pain. I'm in this, I'm in that. You're always just pushing and pulling. And that sounds all fine and great on social media, but real talk, do you want to be at war with your body 24/7? No, you have a family to raise. You have a career. You have relationships. You have financial obligations. The war, you need energy. So really with this podcast, we want to take you from warrior to conqueror, right? A conqueror is someone that may still have all those diagnoses. We're not using them as a crutch. We know that it's part of our healing journey. However, we have the tools in our toolbox. And so I think that's really important. I love the spin that you put on it, because if you don't have that mindset, and I tell people, I do the unsexy stuff, right? Nobody wants to talk about mindset and all of that. You know, no one wakes up with acne on their face thinking, what can I do to balance my gut microbiome? It's more like, where's the acne patches? Where's the creams, the essential oils? We want the quick fix. But to get that actual healing, right, to get to those root causes, you got to do a little bit of the unsexy. So start talking to us about a little bit of the unsexy work, as I would call it, that sometimes is overlooked when you are on these journeys.
Yeah, for any chronic based disease of the body, right? So the disease is just the body's out of ease and that's it. It's imbalance. There's an imbalance and there's in it's oversimplified. But I think that when we start to oversimplify things, then we can understand the work can be done and will be done. We need to find out what our toxicities are and we need to find out what our deficiencies are. So our toxicities are, we have too much of something in the body. Could be too much estrogen, right? So it's okay. Well, why do we have too much estrogen in the body? Well, it could be we're making the proper amount of estrogen, but the liver is not detoxing it and getting it out of the body fast enough. Why might that be? Or phase two detoxification, a lot of inflammation. It could be alcohol consumption, blood sugar dysregularity. It could be constipation where you're only having one or two or maybe three bowel movements a week. And so estrogen is being reabsorbed back into the body. So there's a lot of different reasons and that's just estrogen, right? So we're looking at those toxicities. It could be xenoestrogens. It could be plastics. It could be pesticides, heavy metals, and much more. It can also be gut-based dysfunction and it could be parasites, candida, SIBO, which is just bacterial overgrowth, or H. pylori. And then with that can cause inflammation in the gut, bloating, water retention, and then a lot of these issues that also mimic endometriosis. So we need to fix those. And then some of the deficiencies might be, well, if we're low in B vitamins, especially if there's an MTHFR gene mutation, well, we need our methylated Bs. And especially if we're, so the interesting thing about disease is that it makes us more stressed. But oftentimes the way that we get disease in the first place is stress. Right? It's one of those things. So now we're making our disease worse because we are stressed. So we're depleting more of our vitamin C, more of our zinc, more of our methylated Bs. And so now we're becoming more and more deficient in these nutrients. And as we get older, we become more deficient in the first place. So what we look to do is we figure out exactly what the toxicities are. And then we figure out what the deficiencies are. We begin to remove those toxicities. And then we begin to replace those deficiencies. And at a very simplified level, it allows you then to disassociate you from the disease, because what we're not doing is curing the disease. What we're doing is fixing the underlying root cause imbalances. And so if you fix the underlying root cause imbalances, remember, no doctor heals a patient. The body heals itself. The doctor or the health coach enables you to be in position to heal, the body in position to heal. So I need to help do something for these heavy metals and those things. And I need to help give you some of the nutrients your body is missing that it's not going to get through just food alone. And so when we do that, now the body says, oh, you've lifted a bit of a weight off of me. I now have room to grow. It's one of the reasons why fasting can be such a great thing. You have now some energy to be able to do these things. Now, with endometriosis, you can take fasting too far, right? Because it's then a greater stressor on the body, leads to more depletion. So, you know, I don't know if that answered your question, but at a base level, we all need to understand is that we're not our disease, which you stated. And really what we are is a set of underlying root cause imbalances caused by toxicities and deficiencies.
I love that you mentioned fasting. I know, especially in the healing community, and especially for everyone that is listening to this podcast, I'd say like 95% female, as soon as they hear fasting, they get all excited and they're like, oh, the weight's coming off, honey. I'm going to get slim, thick. I am on the journey. But let's talk about where fasting kind of can, I guess, become detrimental, because a lot of people don't understand how to properly fast. So I'd love to talk about some of the benefits of that and then some of the, you know, pros and the cons and how it can actually work against you, because I think that's a really big deal, especially for everyone that has a uterus. The fasting, you need a little more information and guidance to get the most bang for your buck.
100%. Men and women experience fasting in a very different way. And it's simply like, if we look at biology, so everyone's going to get short-term fasting benefit, but men can then continue to get long-term fasting benefit, where women typically on their body, it's a greater stressor. And so if let's look at it like this, anything that can be good for the body can also be harmful for the body. And so when we look at intermittent fasting, well, let's just say we the minimum intermittent fast is 12 hours. So let's just say we stop eating by 6 o'clock at night and we start eating again at 6 the next morning, or maybe 7 at night to 7 the next morning. Like, that's the minimum intermittent fast. But what does it do? Well, it enables your body to essentially have a period of time where no more food is coming in. So there's no more of an energy-based loss to the digestion of food. That's about 30% of all your energy goes towards digestion. And if more isn't coming in, then there isn't the same breakdown and then assimilation. So if there isn't more nutrients coming in, which is typically a good thing, right? But we're not raising mTOR. We're not in more of an anabolic state. We're in more of a catabolic state. So your white blood cells, as well as other parts of your immune system, actually begin cellular cleanup. So they can begin to the white cells, white blood cells can be broken down. Old mitochondria can be broken down. And when there's not enough fuel, your body, yes, it will tap into glycogen stores. So basically in the liver, the sugar stores, but it will also break down viruses. It'll break down weak mitochondria. It'll break down necrotic tissue, cancer cells, and it will start to use those as a fuel source as well. So that's where a lot of that benefit comes from, especially with a longer fast. So we've seen women in our practice, we run somewhere around 50,000 to 100,000 lab tests every single year. And these are at-home lab tests that literally anybody can run. You don't need doctor's permission, anything like that. But what it does, it looks at what's going on with the stress levels in your body. So as we fast, typically cortisol levels or stress levels increase because we don't have any food coming in. So cortisol has to increase. It's called the glucocorticoid. And why does that increase? Well, if you don't produce glucocorticoids, you don't break down liver glycogen. Like, so your blood sugar is dropping too low. That was the issue with Addison's disease. I didn't produce cortisol. And since I didn't produce cortisol, it didn't act as an anti-inflammatory, and I couldn't break down blood sugar, which means I kept diving into wild low blood sugar until my body sent surges of hormone and then it would spike too high. And so, you know, the body is a finely tuned machine, but what happens is when it's overly stressed, women get lower levels of progesterone. And so that means the last 7 to 10 days of their menstrual cycle is pretty debilitating. Bloating, water retention, acne, lower mood, irritability, overwhelm, poor sleep, sometimes night sweats. And it's mimicking a lot of the maybe imbalances of menopause actually just earlier in your menstrual-based life cycle. So I could go on and on. I'm going to stop there, but it actually will lower thyroid. Most of the women we see that try to go on a keto-based diet or a low-carb diet for too long, meaning past 3 to 4 weeks, 21 to 28 days, yes, they get short-term results, 5 to 10 pounds of weight loss. But then what happens is they slow their metabolism. TSH begins to increase past a 3, which we don't like it past a 2. Estrogen dominance, meaning normal estrogen, but low progesterone, higher evening cortisol, so their sleep isn't as great. And we start to see a trend towards then slower metabolism, metabolic rate, as well as all the estrogen dominance-based issues. So hopefully that was not too out of control.
No, it wasn't out of control. We like to get out of control because this is the thing, right? We've got the surface information. We love social media, right? But there's only so much you can do in about a 60-second reel and Instagram post. So we like to dig a little deeper on here. We're ready for it. So you mentioned your practice. Tell us a little bit about that. Like we said, you turned your pain into your passion. Tell us a little bit about your practice and what it's all about.
So my official background, like I said, when my early 20s and late teens, I tried to do whatever I could for myself. So oftentimes we try to heal ourselves. And then we have all this information. We're not better yet, but we want to help others too in our own way. So I became a certified nutritionist first. I was studying it anyways. Why not? It was a passion of mine. Became a certified personal trainer, National Academy of Sports Medicine, all these great places. Became a certified strength and conditioning specialist. And I just continued to kind of move with that. And then I never felt like I had a lot of the self-worth and kind of issues when I was younger, like me become a doctor, like that's not going to happen. But, you know, I'd read a couple thousand books. I'd done my work. Like this is pre-internet. I was lucky because internet has ruined, unfortunately, now you can always move out of this, but it's ruined the newest generation. And the reason is that a 1500 word article is not a 300 page book. And so the depth of knowledge, we can't get that unless we read a book. And the nice thing is when you read someone's book, you get 20 years. I mean, hopefully they've been in practice, you know, at least 5, 10 years, but like you're getting decades of their knowledge in a book. And I always thought that that was mind blowing. Like I get this person's whole career essentially in a book. And so I would read book after book. And finally, when I was on my healing journey with Dr. Pete, she said, how are you not going back to school to get your degree? So anyway, long story short, went back to school, got my Doctor of Naturopathy degree. But my internships, I did overseas. I did them in the US, yes. But I went to India and studied Ayurveda. I went to Sri Lanka. I went to China and studied in a TCM hospital. I went to Europe. And the reason I did that is not to just bounce from place to place. I actually thought that I was going to find one system of medicine that was going to be the end all be all. And that I would then practice that. You know, like that's what I was committed to. Lo and behold, I realized that every form of medicine is amazing, even conventional medicine in acute-based circumstances, right? We need that. But it's when you combine them all. So you don't make one person fit into one practice. I love acupuncture, but you're not curing all of the diseases of the world with acupuncture. Like, that's just not the way it's going to be. It's a great adjunct, a great add-on, and it helps amazingly well with nervous system issues, insomnia, stress, etc. But I've never seen it be a cure-all for parasites for a lot of these things, you know, you combine. So what I realized was that if I was really going to help people, I needed to not make them fit my practice. I had to fit their issues. So it's what we call an integrative health practitioner. We integrate the best of Ayurvedic medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, herbalism, at-home lab testing, functional medicine, bioregulatory medicine, which is a German way of looking at the disease progression, which is kind of the toxicity and deficiencies, and a few others. So we have seven main disciplines. And what we look at is these things can be replicated. That was a big thing with my practice. So I don't know how you feel about homeopathy. I love it. It was like 25% of my board exam. I'm board certified. The problem is I couldn't replicate it from person to person to person. So I don't use it in my practice. Doesn't mean it's not phenomenal. It just means when someone comes to me, just like they come to you, I need a replicable system to help them heal. And so that's what I now practice today.
I love it. So it takes a team. We talk about it. You need a team of practitioners. There's not that one tool. There's not that one clean eating. You know, everyone's like, tell me the one, am I going keto, paleo? You know, what am I doing to, you know, decrease inflammation? It's very specific. So I want you to go back over those overarching items and how someone could really implement just a tiny bit of that if they are dealing with chronic inflammation. Like, where do they go? Where do they start? Like, what's that foundation for them?
So I hope you don't mind me mentioning, but I wrote a book called The Rain Barrel Effect. And I wrote it after 18 years in practice. So it's 400 pages. It's 200 pages on why we get sick, become unwell, gain weight, etc. And then it's 200 pages on how to fix that. And so it really details my practice, because when I wrote that book, we had a 6-month wait list and we were seeing 20,000 appointments a year. And at that point I realized, cause we all come from a little bit of scarcity, like, oh, if I give all this information away, I'm not gonna have a practice anymore. And so like, it's normal. Like, that's normal human scarcity. It's like, you've done all this work. You don't want to give it all away. But I realized that you should always give away your best stuff, cause you always have to fine tune it for people. Like, no matter how detailed I get, people still want to customize for them, but at least I could give it all away and I could teach it to practitioners. So the last half of the book is called The De-Stress Protocol, and it's diet, exercise, stress reduction, toxin removal, rest, which is sleep protocols, emotional balance, scientifically backed supplements, and a success mindset. And the reason why I wrote it, and I wrote it like that, is because, just like you said, people ask me for, what's the one supplement I can take for endometriosis? What's the one diet I should follow for endometriosis? What's the one exercise routine? And there are a lot of great tips, which you give every single day, you know, on social media. Don't overexercise, don't overstress the body, but do make sure that you're getting enough in for your fitness, right? Go for your walking, go for your steps, but don't overdo your running. Like, it's all of these different things. So it's finding that balance and it's finding the right methodology for you. But what people aren't talking about is that you don't need to be 100% on your diet, 100% on your exercise. What you want to do is follow something like the De-Stress Protocol, where you only need to be 80% on all 8. And that allows you to mess up a little bit and still get the results you want. So it's like, it's how I get the results and continue to feel better each and every year. And my metric now is, yeah, my labs look great, of course. You know, like, that's what you need to do once you get well. But now I'm working on biological age. It's like, how much can I reduce my rate of aging and my biological age, which we're teaching a lot of. So it's like, there's always a next level to your health. And we're always working on something. But I like to be able to enjoy a flex meal once or twice a week with my family. Like, I have two daughters and like, that's what we choose to do. It's what I want to do. Some days I'm traveling and I miss a workout. Like, I don't want to feel bad about it. So what the De-Stress Protocol does is it allows you to be human and still get well.
Say that one again. You said allows you to be human.
And still get well. Exactly.
Yes. And it's very interesting because I see stuff out there and there's like, it's only one way to heal. And I made a post about that. And I'm like, anyone that's telling you there's only one way to heal, like, I guess, you know, if that's what's working for them, but real talk, is that something, you know, some of these restrictive eating diets or the over-exercising or, you know, even the over-supplementing, right? Is that something you can do for the next 10, 15, 20, 25 years? What if there was a change in the economy and your budget and your circumstances where maybe you couldn't buy 35 bottles of supplements? Wouldn't it have been better to get to some of those root causes so that if something comes up, then you know what to do, but you're not reliant on these things? Because I think that's a really big deal.
Yeah, I completely agree. And so I believe there's two parts to every program, technically three. So there's the initial phase where you really need to empty that rain barrel. Typically it's 21 days, 21 day functional medicine detox, 21 day for like a gut healing protocol. We call it the CBO protocol. So 21 days to like, just tip the whole party in your favor. Like you need to push for a little bit of that big drainage in the beginning. Then after that, there's the regular healing protocol, which is typically 3 to 6 months. We find most people can heal in 3 to 6 months. Now, for debilitating autoimmune issues, endometriosis, yeah, they might need another six, but you see definite progress over 3 to 6 months. And then, yes, we continue because everyone who's had real, you know, harsh illnesses, and I would include endometriosis, there is a little bit of getting better, little relapse, getting better, little relapse. And so you just want to make sure you're moving, as the graph shows, like, up into the right, right? Like that you want to make sure that you're seeing progress, not a hockey stick. We want to see slow and steady progress, especially people I work with myalgic encephalomyelitis, which is just you feeling like post-COVID, you're feeling flu-like symptoms all the time. You don't get better all at once. You get better 10% a month, but after 10 months, it's 100%. And so like you feel phenomenally better at 50% better. And so that's how we work to do it. And a big part of that is the understanding going into it that you'll do more upfront, then you'll be in your healing protocol. And then the maintenance protocol has to be something that you are good with for the rest of your life. Now you'll make changes, of course, but like you said, you're not taking 35 bottles of supplements for the rest of your life. Even if you could, you shouldn't, right? Like your liver still has to process all of this. So it's like, could you take 6 to 10? Sure. Like a lot of people don't think buying a bag of goji berries, like it's a supplement, right? Drinking green tea, phenomenal for you, but it's a supplement. So like I count all of those things as supplemental. And just the last part is, you know, so much talk about carnivore diet, keto diet. Are you really going to eat a ribeye steak for one or two meals for every day for the rest of your life? Because if not, like, what's the plan? Okay, the short-term plan is that, but why? Is it really fixing the underlying root cause? And then if not, well, what's the transition look like? What's the plan?
So let's chat about nutrition a little bit, because I know just with my community, I think it's just not my community, in the chronic illness conqueror, AKA warrior community, they mm-hmm. just want that one thing. But what are some of the benefits of maybe trying some of that more, I want to say restrictive eating, but like you said, knowing what the plan is after, do you think it's beneficial to do that and then move on? Or do you think it causes more like disordered eating and other emotional stressors that come along with that?
There's a time and place for everything. I don't think there's necessarily a time and place for the carnivore diet. And I'm not, this is no disrespect to anybody who's a promoter of the carnivore diet. And here's why, because you're going to get results. But then that's short term, even if it's for 5 to 10 years, because the long-term data is not great. And I'm not anti-meat, but the long-term data on eating 2 pounds of meat a day, and that'd be your predominant source, there's no long-lived population that's ever done it. Now, maybe we'll be the very first, but I'm not willing to bet your life or my life on that, or any of my clients or my family. Like that's the thing. So I say, okay, well, like what's worked? Well, like, what do we know? And what do we know for food sensitivities? We can test food sensitivities. So really what I want to share with people is that there is absolute benefit to a low carb diet. Okay. So we all know that, and I agree with it. And I've used it in my own personal training, nutrition, all my practices since the late 90s. So all of our essentially like healing protocols first start with a lower carb, not no carb, but lower carb diet for about 21 days. And then we ease the carbs back in very systematically. And the reason we do that is that there is real science to balancing blood sugar levels, helping with hormones, helping with inflammation. So like that's legitimate and real. But we also all know, like you as a practitioner, and I know, people are going to have carbohydrates again. So like, it does not make sense to pretend that we're never going to have them. And what happens is if you don't get used to eating carbs again, you become desensitized to actually be eating carbohydrates. So now your body and your cellular makeup does not do very good when you eat carbohydrates in the future. And nevertheless, to say that it also imbalances your gut microbiome. Now, in the beginning, you might actually get relief because you have an overgrowth of SIBO. You have an overgrowth of candida, but that's not the carbs' fault. You were taking birth control in the past, consuming a lot of alcohol, fried foods, a lot of stress, a lot of antibiotics. Like, all those things cause the overgrowth, and then carbs just exacerbate it, but it's not the carbs' fault. So once we get the candida and SIBO in check, you can eat carbs again. And that's a pretty amazing thing. So we like people to have a balanced diet because, to me, if you look over the course of 10 years, it's the only thing that's actually doable, is to be able to balance the macros with carbs, proteins, and fats.
Yeah, it has to be sustainable. I think that's the biggest thing. But I want to swing the pendulum the other direction and pivot just a tiny bit, because then we have those who are strictly vegetarian. And I am doing a lot of research and I'm seeing a lot of things in my practice, and we've got a lot of people on a fertility journey. And so I'd love to get your opinion. I definitely know it's all about balance, but we have people that want to be strictly carnivore. And then we have all, you know, those that are like, if it's not, you know, straight from heaven's gates and fruits and vegetables, they don't want anything to do with it. But when you're on a fertility journey, I'm seeing some huge, huge nutrient deficiencies. I mean, not just in your symptoms, but like when we're running those functional tests, the math's not mathing. You're missing something. So what is your take on that?
Well, you know, I think that people can be healthy on a 100% plant-based, vegan-based diet. However, I have not seen it succeed for a lot of people. And it's partially because they're trying to do it as part of their healing process. However, they're already imbalanced, and that makes it a lot more challenging. So yes, if you were to go on simply a juicing-based diet, juicing your veggies and all of that, what do? Well, you all of a sudden get back an enormous amount of energy because there's no more digestion that needs to be done. So that's a big thing. You're also removing protein. If you remove protein, what happens? Well, you decrease mTOR, you increase autophagy, you increase AMPK, cellular cleanup. And the other thing is that your body then just goes after all the excesses that shouldn't be there. But then what happens is the pendulum then swings because you become too catabolic. And just as you said, then you get a lot of nutrient-based deficiencies, not just with vitamin B12. It's not the only deficiency we see in vegans. We see calcium deficiencies. We see, of course, vitamin D. We see a lot of these different things. Now, you can supplement with them, and I'm not saying that you can't. But what also happens is that you eventually do need to eat protein. So we have one camp that's way overdoing protein, a gram per pound of body weight. Fine. Like, yes, that's going to help with body transformation. No doubt about it. It's going to help with satiation. I lived in that world. I totally get it. But longevity, I don't know about that. So is there a happy medium? Like, it's almost like nobody wants to be at a happy medium because it's not very marketing wise. Like, it's not very hypey, and you need to be hypey a little bit. And so then you have the vegan camp though. And I look at people's I put it in. I look at all the stats in terms of macros and micros, and they might get 40 grams of protein a day. And that's not going to help your healing journey because you need enough protein in order to boost the immune system or keep the immune system balanced. And the protein they are getting, if they're doing it correctly, is from beans and legumes. And unfortunately, those beans and legumes contain fructans, and those fructans then are fermentable by candida and bacterial overgrowth. So it doesn't mean that those aren't great for you in the long run, because they are. Every Blue Zones-based diet included one cup of beans a day. So it's like, I'm not against that. But in the short term, yeah, you might get bloating and distension from that. Let's fix the gut. Let's get you more nutrient-dense foods, and then we'll make that shift. So for most people, including if you're vegan, 5 to 10% of fish or eggs or meat, and yes, it can be like, you want to be grass-fed and pasture and all those things, that would be ideal. Now, for some people, it's for spiritual reasons, and I get that. And so we can help you as well, but it's going to have to then be more from a plant-based protein powder and other things that aren't as fermentable. So you can make anything work, I think, that's healthy. I don't think overdoing, like I said, the meat part of it is healthy in the long run for longevity, and especially for men, more for men because of cardiovascular issues. And I know I'm going to get a lot of, but you don't understand. I get it. I know. I understand. And I'm willing to take that as well. I don't have any, you know, dog in the race in terms of diet. Like, I do whatever is best for people. And I just have not seen a long-lived population that's ever eaten a completely meat-based diet. Just haven't seen.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, send the DMs, send the emails. I'm ready for you. Come for me. I'm ready. I want to kind of wrap it up with just because I feel like we could talk for hours. I'm definitely going to bring you back because there's so many more questions and things we could delve into. But for someone that's listening right now that's dealing with chronic systemic inflammation, what are just maybe 3 to 5 things that they could start doing today, knowing that we still need to be working on root cause, but it's always nice to just get those micro wins.
So we always say in our practice, if we could heal just 2 things in every individual, it would take care of 80% of the issues. Not 100%, but it would take care of 80%. So the first one is the gut. So you really want to look to see if you have 1 of the 4 gut-based issues. Now, I keep going back to 4 because it's not 100. Like, you're only looking for 4. Parasites, H. pylori, Helicobacter pylori infection, a bacterial infection. Parasites are 25% of the population. H. pylori is somewhere between 25 and 33% of the population. Then we have candida overgrowth, the yeast overgrowth, which if you've taken antibiotics before, which most of us have, you very likely might have a yeast overgrowth. If you've taken birth control, you very likely might have yeast overgrowth. And then there's SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And that can happen from stress. Believe it or not, like just ileocecal, there's a valve. I've got my little buddy here for anybody watching this on video. So you've got about 20 feet of small intestine, and then it goes to about 5 feet of colon or large intestine. And there's a little valve where the small intestine goes into the large intestine, and it's in the bottom right of your gut. And what happens is in stressed people, that valve sometimes stays open, and it's meant to be a one-way street. So sometimes the colon, which is predominantly bacteria, backfills, which is kind of a nasty term, but it backfills bacteria into our small intestine, which is supposed to be far more sterile and contain more lactobacilli. So when you change the pH and you change the bacteria, now you have this bacterial overgrowth. So that moves me down. And then of course there's intestinal permeability, leaky gut, which causes all these things in the first place. But usually there's a reason for the leaky gut. And then if we move towards the second one, which I just kind of mentioned, it's stress. So stress, I know it's kind of a catch-all, but honestly, it is the missing piece for many people. We don't like to hear that. And so I'm the bearer of bad news. But the good news is that if we take it seriously, I had to take it seriously myself. And it doesn't mean just sitting down and meditating. It actually means beginning to reframe how you're looking at life, how you're looking at your health, how you're looking at relationships and your upbringing and all these different things. And you work on it over time. You don't have to be perfect. You work at it over time. What happens is it turns off the fight or flight. It turns off the sympathetic nervous system. Why this is so important is that if you're in fight or flight, you can be doing everything right, like I thought I was. And the problem is your body can't heal because you're producing stress hormones like norepinephrine, neurotransmitter, you're producing more cortisol, you're in constant inflammation, and you're not in a healing state. Your sleep isn't, you're not getting a 90 minutes of deep sleep, 2 hours of REM. And what your body needs to do is shift into the parasympathetic nervous system. So at the very least, okay, spend 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. in more of a stress state. That's at first. But make sure that you can turn it off at 7 p.m. at night, that you have an anchor routine in the evening that you can start to then wind down those cortisol levels. So you can turn on serotonin and melatonin to then get a great night's sleep and have 12 hours of healing. That's the start. That's what I had to learn how to do, is to regulate that autonomic nervous system, which is sympathetic and parasympathetic, fight or flight, or rest and recovery.
You're basically in my brain. I swear everything. I'm like, how is he in my brain? But I love this. I'm like, I'm not the only person that's saying this. I'm going to wrap it up with this. You have to be in that rest and digest to heal. You cannot heal if your body literally thinks it's being chased by a bear 24/7. It's not going to happen. And I know that you guys want the quick fixes, but the sleep and the rest and just being able to calm your nervous system, it's a little more than just meditation and yoga. And I love my essential oils, but it's a little deeper than that. It takes a whole mindset and transformation. So where can people find you to learn more? And tell us a little bit more about the Rain Barrel Effect, the book. Where can they find that?
So the book, it's in its 5th year now. And it's been just a great way to be able to introduce people to this thought process. And so that's at stephencabral.com. You'll be able to see it there. And people can check it out. It's also on Amazon, of course. It's just, we like to try to get that to people as inexpensively as possible. That's why I've published books in the past on health, on fitness, on all those things. But now going forward, I'll always self-publish a book so that I have complete control of it and just be able to get that to people less expensively. Because I don't believe that anybody should ever like all the information you put out on Instagram, it's for people to learn, right? It's for people to grow. And like, that's really what we want. And I think as health practitioners, like that's the main thing. But there is one more thing. And I hope you don't mind me mentioning it. We try to teach people to take back control of their health. So yes, read the Rain Barrel Effect, listen to podcasts, all those great things. My podcast, The Cabral Concept, I talk about a lot of these things, but we have something called the Integrative Health Practitioner Institute, IHP. And so it teaches people to first heal themselves and then go on to heal others. I truly believe that everybody should become the health coach in their home so that for their children, for their parents, for whoever it is, that they can be the one that everybody turns to for this health-based information. Because I don't know, maybe it's different for others, but when I was learning what I was learning, you can't help but want to share that. And you're like, how does nobody else know that we don't have to have disease? Like, and I was frustrated, but excited at the same time. And so we actually teach people to become a certified health coach and get access to all these labs, get access to all this information in a very systematic fashion. So it's step one, and then it's, you know, step 10.
The health coach in every home. And it really is to empower, educate, and motivate, right? Once you change your own health and you get on that journey, like you said, you want to tell others, you see other people. I know there's times where I'll sit down and I'm just looking around and you can see all of the, you know, the hurt and the shame and the pain, and people are truly looking for answers. And so the best way to do that, right, is to share what you know, screenshot the podcast as you're listening to it, tag us on Instagram. We share it in our stories. We really have to get the word out. I'm all about not gatekeeping, right? We no longer can gatekeep because someone had to teach us and we had to learn, right? So once we get it, we have to pass that on. Thank you so much, Dr. Cabral. This has been amazing, and we'll definitely have you back in the future.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for all the work that you do and for having me on the show.
So I know that you guys really enjoyed this episode. Here's a couple things I want you to think about. I want you to take the tips, the tools, the tricks, the whatever you want to call them, put them in your toolbox and create a plan of action. Now, for some of you, that plan of action is going to be something that you can do on your own. And then there's others that are like, LJ, I need you to mentor me. I need to be guided. I need you to help me pivot and troubleshoot. If that is you, number one, don't be discouraged. You are not broken. There's nothing wrong with you. You just need the support and the tools to get you to the other side. Many times we get discouraged in our healing journey. We make 5 steps forward, 2 steps back, and then we move a little further back. This is the thing. I am here to lead and guide you and hold your hand every step of the way. If I'm talking to you right now, I want you to click the link and the show notes and book the complimentary discovery call. And let's create a plan and discuss your options. Everyone's plan and options are going to be different. But what I will say is that for everyone, I am able to take you from endo warrior to endo conqueror. We're going to make lifestyle changes. We're going to make fitness changes, nutrition changes. All of these things are going to come together synergistically. So once again, if you're listening and you're like, LJ, I want you to mentor, lead, and guide me, go to the show notes, click the link, and hop on that free discovery call, and I'll see you guys next week.